I'm Nate Burgess.
I'm Sean Watson.
I'm Phil DeLuca, and we are Commanderin.
Hey, little Phil, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good.
Oh, that's good. Are you making lots of Baloths and playing with all the big creatures over there?
Oh, I've been playtesting Atraxa, in fact.
Oh, that sounds good. That doesn't sound like the sort of thing you'd normally do, does it, little Phil?
No, I have to fight those Phyrexians with fire. Fight Phyrexians with fire.
The enemy of your enemy is your friend, is that what you're saying? So you're your own friend?
Oh, yeah.
So, how do you sleep at night, little Phil?
Oh, I don't. I toss and turn all the time.
Mummy Phil and Daddy Phil putting you into therapy. Good. I am unfortunately going to tell everyone Big Phil can't be here.
Aww.
But, yeah, I know. But thanks for listening, and we are Commanderin. Here is some music playing.
Commanderin.
Hey everybody, thanks for listening. We are going to put a spotlight on community issues, but never ever talk about three banned topics: religion, politics, and Hearthstone. Remember to head over to join our Patreon community at patreon.com/commanderinmtg, and by donating as little as a buck, I believe that's a dollar, a show, you'll get to be part of our competitions. You'll get automatic entry to all our competitions, won't you, Nate?
Probably, yeah.
And you will also get to get hold of some exclusive content that hopefully we'll be bringing you some exclusive Q&As with Magic creators soon.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. That sort of stuff. Very, very cool. And if you pay $10 or more, you can get access to our show plans, some of our questions and answer sort of sessions we're doing. But anyway, for paying $10 or more to Patreon, you could be part of our show plans and get to contribute towards the creation of shows. And this week, we have a wonderful show lined up for you. We're going to continue our big token series, talking about commanders who get their creatures' tokens from your opponent's cards. Yep, that's right, from your opponents. This is my kind of token creation. This will be primarily Una, Queen of the Fae, Nath of the Guiltleaf, or Nate as the Guiltleaf, as I've come to know, and Kalitas, Traitor of Get.
Yeah, all black commanders.
Yeah. So, Nate, remember last episode when we talked about black commanders?
Yeah.
Let's go round again, tapping the swamps for another time.
All right.
But first, we're going to bring you a new semi-regular feature, which will be an when-needed feature, which is going to be
Rules Rodeo!
Rules that have come up in our recent playgroup sessions. So, Nate, one come up recently.
Mm-hmm.
Can you remember it?
Let's see. I think there was a Tree of Perdition involved. And an exquisite blood involved.
Yes, and the same thing happened again with a Magister Sphinx being involved and a tainted sigil.
Right.
Yeah.
So the question is, if you have something that just sets someone's life total, does that count as life lost? Or maybe in life gained in some situations?
The answer is yes. Yes, it does.
Yep.
Essentially, if I'm on 30 life and Nate does something like casts Soren Markov, after I've called him a boop, he sets my life total to 10. So effectively, I lose 20 life in that situation.
Yep.
So this means any effects that are triggered by loss of life would also be triggered by this ability.
Right. And there are some white cards that can also set your life total in the positive direction which counts for life gained.
So a primary example of this would be Resolute Archangel. So that, when it enters the battlefield, resets your life total to your starting life total. So if I'm on one life, and I cast it, and it successfully enters the battlefield, or not even cast it, if I somehow get it to enter the battlefield, I will gain 39 life at that instance.
Which counts for life gain triggers.
Indeed. Another final, slightly odd card that does this is Reverse the Sands, which is relevant because it's just been reprinted in the Kynaeus and Tiro deck, which is you redistribute the life totals. So how that works is everyone, you decide who's going to have which life total, then everyone gains or loses life to bring them to the correct life total after the spell is resolved. It has to be they get a full life total. So if there's three of us playing, one of us is on 10, one on 20, and one on 30 life, you can't say, well, I'm on 50 and you're both on 5, despite the entire sort of cumulative. You have to redistribute the whole life totals being the keyword. But then everyone goes up or down. And interestingly, if you have Platinum Empyrean out, your life total can't change, so you're effectively immune to that effect.
Good?
Yes. if you're on, like, 100 life or something. So if I'm on 10 life and you're on 20 life and I cast that spell, I have a choice of either staying on 10 life and you on 20 life or making you on 10 life and me on 20. You redistribute the entirety of the totals.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, you don't, like, get a pool of life that is a sum total of everyone's life totals and then drain it out. You redistribute the big chunks. In a four-player game, there are four totals, and each player gets one of those totals.
All right.
Yes. To summarize it quickly, if something would change your life total in a single hit, but without doing damage or specifically saying life loss or life gain, you gain or lose life to give you the appropriate amount, and it will activate triggers. And I'm sure, because rules questions come from our playgroups all the time, our semi-regular feature,
Rules Rodeo,
will be one you hear quite a bit of.
Hmm. And we might have another one coming up in this episode.
Indeed. Indeed. So, have you been playtesting anything recently, Nate?
I've been trying to figure out who works with Vial Smasher, and I think it's going to be one of the Simic partners.
So, I lost to it, Vial Smasher and Kaideli recently.
Yep.
It was basically trying to do what my Kaideli and Ikra Shadiki deck does, but instead of having Eldrazi, it had big X spells.
Yeah, those work.
Yeah.
They do work with Vial Smasher. The when you cast a spell and Vial Smasher's out and you have an X spell, then it counts X in that mana cost.
Hmm, I had to check that. I wasn't sure about that one. So that's cool. Well, I mean, that covers what I've been playtesting as well, which is Kaideli and Ikra Shadiki Sultai Eldrazi. So it has two lines of attack. One, early game, you are just ramping and trying to gain some life off using Ikra. Late game, you play some Eldrazi and do what Eldrazi do best. Annihilator! Or, alternatively, once you get to that late game, oh yeah, you gain a load of life with Eldrazi and Ikra, so it's just a nice bonus to keep you in the game. You can draw a bunch of cards by sacrificing the Eldrazi to things like Greater Good, or some of the green effects that let you draw cards for creatures' power and stuff, and then Mindgrind slash Villainous Wealth out for the win.
Yep.
Which is a... I learned it from watching you!
Yeah, you did. Yeah, I've been thinking about Ikra Shadiki with white so I can get Duran the Siege Tower working.
Ooh, lots of big butts on all those guys.
Mm-hmm. I like those.
Yeah, yeah. Do you, Nate?
Honestly.
Would you lie about that, though, Nate?
Nope, I can't.
No, you can't deny it, can you? When a tree folk walks in with a itty-bitty bark, etc., etc. So, yeah, and I'm intrigued to know what listeners are doing. I've been trying to find a good partner to go with Timna the Weaver, and I'm not sure what it should be.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Timna. I think Davos is probably better. Davros? No, Ravos, not the Doctor Who villain.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think maybe Abzan Tokens with Rayhan and... Ravos, however you say that word. Possibly is one to do. I've never ever built a token deck, so that could be one to do.
Well, does Una count?
Una would be a token deck. She's been in a mill deck, but never the commander.
Mm.
We're going to get into her in a minute. And while we're talking about interesting stuff with lots of activated abilities, we should probably come on to this week's watch list card.
Did you say the watch list?
The watch list. Da, da, da. Hey, Nate, what is the watch list?
The watch list is a segment where we look at a card that will affect your meta.
Yes, so cards we've looked at in the past to give you an idea. Consecrated Sphinx.
Lay of Old.
Deadeye Navigator.
Yep.
We should probably name one that isn't blue.
Ulamog.
Sorin Markov. So big things that when they get into your meta, everyone's decks kind of have to adjust to deal with them. This week we've got a funky little artifact, which is, Nate?
Rings of Brighthearth. For three, an artifact. Whenever you play an activated ability, if it isn't a mana ability, you may pay two generic mana. If you do, copy that ability. You may choose new targets for the copy.
What is a mana ability, Nate? Can you do a definition off the top of your head?
A mana ability is an ability that generates mana.
Indeed. For example, tapping a land. Or a more interesting example, tapping Selvala Explorer Returned. Although it does a load of stuff, it also puts mana into your pool, so it is a mana ability.
Wow.
Bet you didn't know that, kids. Well, some of you probably did, but there you go. Which means it doesn't use the stack, which means parlay with Selvala can't be interacted with the stack. But that's a different watch list. So, activated abilities. Copy it. Choose new targets. Why is this a watchlist card? That seems fine, doesn't it? No one plays with activated abilities in our format, because unless you've got red in haste, you know, most of them are tap abilities and you just die, don't you?
No, there's a bunch of things with activated abilities. Like Aili Eternal Pilgrim? Have you heard of that one?
Once or twice, yep. Those of you playing the drinking game, take a shot, yep.
Oh, yeah, I got to add her on there.
Oh, well, I think it should be whenever Sean mentions her, because I think I have a problem.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Aili Eternal Pilgrim's a very good one, so you get double life gain, because the sacrifice is a cost, which means it's not part of the activated ability. It's the cost to activate the ability.
Right.
Which is great. Both are abilities, in fact, the life gain or the double exile.
Things like Trading Post or Endbringer.
Oh, they're excellent ones. Very good examples. I'm trying to think of my favorite activated abilities on cards. It's good with Phoenix, because all your creatures gain an activated ability.
Oh, wow.
Which basically means you double your mill.
Wow.
If you just need to kill someone and you've got, you know, 10 or 20 power of creatures on the table, tap them all, plus some mana, and mill out most of their deck.
Man.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one. So why, that still doesn't seem too broken, though, Nate.
Mm.
Why should this be on the watch list?
So later in this episode, we're going to talk about Una, Queen of the Fae, and she's very mana hungry. She eats your mana. She spends your mana. But the thing is, there are a couple of artifacts with the word monolith in the name. Basalt Monolith and Grim Monolith. Now, both of these do tap to generate mana, but they don't untap normally unless you use the activated ability to untap them.
Yeah, which is very distinctly a second ability on the card, not part of the first ability.
Right.
Which is tap for mana, yeah.
You're effectively tapping each monolith twice, which means you generate more mana than it requires to untap it. So if you have Rings of Brighthearth and one of these monoliths, you can have infinite mana.
Yeah, this is a classic infinite mana loop combo. The Rings of Brighthearth unlocks it. I used to put it into a Garve deck, but then took it out because he's got a bunch of activated abilities and also is mana hungry. I can't remember. I think I just took it out because everyone just returned to... Basically, people held a Crozan Grip or returned to dust.
Oh, yeah.
For whenever they... Oh, Sean's playing his Garve deck. Someone got the Disenchant ready? Okay, cool. So, basically, any artifact that allows you to go infinite should be you should be wary of. Ashnod's Altars, another good one, can go infinite with certain commanders like Breyer, who we'll discuss in the next few episodes. And anything where you can put more mana, spend less mana to get more mana out and do it over and over again. Dirty, dirty, dirty thing.
Do you get twice the mana with each sacrifice on Ashnod's?
With Ashnod's, with Breyer, you need three cards. You need Breyer, Ashnod's Altar, and Nim Deathmantle. So Ashnod's Altar is sacrifice a creature, gain two colorless mana. Nim Deathmantle is pay four mana when a creature dies, and you can put it from the graveyard back into play attached to Nim Deathmantle. So Breyer comes in, puts in her and two Thopters. You sacrifice her and one of the Thopters for four mana to put her back in with the Nim Deathmantle, netting you one Thopter. So if you can create infinite Thopters, you can create infinite mana with the altar, which allows you to infinitely lightning bolt everybody.
But how does Rings of Brighthearth come in?
Oh, it doesn't. I'm saying there are Rings of Brighthearth is in that sort of select group that goes over an edge because it makes infinite. I mean, if you have Rings of Brighthearth, you can sack two artifacts to double lightning bolt people or give a creature -8/-8. I would absolutely put Rings of Brighthearth into a Breyer deck. Just doubles up her efficiency. So sacrificing the creatures is part of the cost of the ability. The cost is pay two mana and sacrifice two creatures.
Okay.
Then you get one of her three abilities. You don't copy the cost. For example, if I had, think of an activated ability that cost mana, Erebos out, which was pay a one and a black and pay two life, draw a card. If I had Rings of Brighthearth in with him, I wouldn't have to pay four life and four black. I would pay one a black, two life, and two colorless. That would copy the ability, draw a card. Doesn't copy the costs of the ability.
Because everything to the left of the colon is the cost, which is free.
Indeed. And that's the bit you're copying. You're copying the activation, not the cost to activate. Okay. Which is why Rings of Brighthearth is so good. Oh my god, I sound like quite knowledgeable about rules this week, Nate. Mm-hmm, indeed.
It's refreshing.
Yeah. Well, I've been playing with Breyer a lot lately, as well as the Sultai deck, which means you have to be kind of sharp on knowing how certain abilities and stuff work to be able to confidently say to your opponent, no, this is right, and I'll be able to show you on my telephone / tablet / computer the reference in the rules that this is how this works.
Yeah.
Knowing your rules makes you a better player as well. So back when I used to play Warhammer, the people that knew the rules better would win more games, full stop.
Yeah, that's usually how games work.
Yeah. But then there's an art to not being a... Enjoy your bleep there. There's an art to not being a... when you tell someone they've got a rule wrong. Just be polite and say, I think you got that wrong. God knows we all get rules wrong from time to time. And when you get it wrong, what's it like to be told, you're wrong, you can't do that? Or is it better for someone to say, just think you got that one wrong there, buddy. Let's just check the rule on that. Yeah, see, that whatever you're doing wrong is wrong. And just be nice.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that's good advice for life, isn't it? Just be polite and decent.
Rules lawyer smash!
Do you not even know how to play Magic? Why don't you go play Yu-Gi-Oh?
I don't wanna.
But you don't even know that if I cast this, then this... get off my table. So, Una loves mana, but we should go over her infinite mana combos. Do you want to do it now, Nate, or do you want to...
Yeah, while we're talking about infinite mana combos. So there's an enchantment in blue called Power Artifact, and it makes the activated abilities of that artifact cost less, and if you put it on one of the monoliths, then you get a net positive of mana.
Yep.
There is also a creature called Palancron, which when it enters the battlefield, you untap seven lands. It costs seven to cast, but if one of your lands generates more than one mana, or you've played a High Tide or maybe a Bubbling Muck in an Una deck, then you can generate more mana.
What Nate's forgotten to mention there is you can return Palancron to your hand for two blue and two colorless.
That's right.
Or two blue and two generic, should I say.
Yes, you can.
You can just keep looping it back and untapping all your land.
If you have a Cloudstone Curio and the Palancron, and you have some kind of clone, you can do tricks there where you cast the Palancron, untap your stuff, then you cast a clone of the Palancron, untap your stuff, return the Palancron to your hand with a Cloudstone Curio, and then just keep going back and forth between those.
Yeah, clones are fairly rare, though. They've not been printed very often, have they?
Just one a set.
Forever.
You can also use that combination, not just the Palancron, you can maybe do it with a Great Whale or a Peregrine Drake, since they have a similar enter the battlefield, untap a certain number of lands effect.
Cloud of Fairies, if this is an Animar special rather than Una, but Cloud of Fairies, you can do it if you have any way of bouncing the cloud back to your hand for free. Cloud of Fairies does untaps two of your lands, so you can just pay one blue, put cloud in, untap two, bounce it back to your hand, rinse, repeat.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. So, Nate, we're talking about Una a lot, but we should probably go into our main topic and actually talk about Una.
Okie doke.
So what does Una do, Nate?
Una, Queen of the Fae, costs 3 generic mana and 3 of these hybrid blue-black.
I like hybrid mana.
Manas. So you can pay either blue or black for any one of those 3. She's a legendary creature, fairy wizard, 5/5 with flying. I like that.
Nice. Yep.
And here's a thing. She's got an activated ability.
Oh, it's a good one as well.
If you pay X and just a single one of these blue-black hybrid manas, choose a color. Target opponent exiles the top X cards of his or her library. For each card of the chosen color exiled this way, put a 1/1 blue and black fairy rogue creature with flying onto the battlefield. Oh, and lands are not colored, by the way.
So how do we exploit that other than infinite mana? Because obviously, if you've created infinite mana, we should just say it now, you exile everyone's decks. For essentially 3 blue or black, hybrid blue-black, if you're playing in a 4-player game. Hey everyone, you know those decks you like so much? Put them in the exile zone.
I like that.
Yes. So other than that, Nate, your observations.
You do have to ramp your mana. Ramping mana is very important in an Una deck.
Yeah, so there are good ways of doing that. The most obvious way, the most common way is Cabal Coffers and Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth will give you an absolute bunch of mana. And then Nakana Revenant, Cryptghast. Hey, we're talking about black stuff again, Nate. Doubling your mana those ways. I find that Liliana of the Dark Realms is a planeswalker that everyone kind of ignores, and then suddenly it ultimates, and everyone goes, What happened there? You're like, ha.
Yeah. If you're including Cabal Coffers and Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth, there are some extra things that go with those. Expedition Map is an artifact that you can sacrifice to search for a land.
Yep. Demonic Tutor. I can't tell you the amount of times I've Demonic Tutored to go and get the other half of those two. People normally use it, or any tutor effect for that matter. People normally use them to go get a spell they want. Nope. Go get the land you need to be able to cast all of your spells.
Yeah. And Beseech the Queen is a tutor that is also thematic in an Una deck.
It is, because you're beseeching your commander. Very nice.
If you already have Cabal Coffers on the field, then Vesuva and Thespian Stage are lands that can become a copy of Cabal Coffers. It's not a legendary land at all, so you can have as many as you can manage.
Which is a bit of an oversight, really, because if you know your Vorthos fluff about the Cabal, it really should be a legendary land. It's the treasure vault where they stored the Mirari after it did its stuff. And in fact, the Mirari is in the artwork of Cabal Coffers and in the flavor text.
And if you like creatures, there's Magus of the Coffers, which is another option in creature form.
Yes. Is there any way to make, that isn't banned, to make all your opponent's stuff one color? The only thing that you can play in this deck, the only thing I can think of is Painter's Servant, which is about as hard banned as a card can get.
Yeah, it is.
There's Celestial Dawn, but that is obviously in white. No, I'm stuck on that one.
Oh.
If someone's playing a monocolored deck, though, you're going to have good fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some other ways of doubling your mana, Bubbling Muck and High Tide will double the power of your swamps and islands for a turn.
Doubling Cube will double the amount of mana in your mana pool.
Yeah, so you have to tap it all up and then activate your Doubling Cube.
Yeah, but Doubling Cube is a favorite of Krufix decks all over the world, but actually I think it can go very well into an Una Queen of the Fae deck.
I think the original Omnath Locus of Mana could probably use them too.
Yes, of course. Yeah, that's good. I think most of those decks became Kruphic Execs, though, didn't they?
Maybe. I just don't know.
Anything else?
If you feel like showing off with a bunch of snow-covered lands, basic lands, then you can run extra planar lens and nobody else gets the benefit. I would only really do that in a mono-colored deck, though.
Yeah, although I would be tempted because they both pump your fairy rogues and make them 2/2s. I would be tempted to run Gauntlet of Power or Caged Sun in this deck.
Yeah, sure.
I think they're both good options. So they double... You choose a colour when you cast them, and they double the amount of mana your lands of... Well, your lands in the case of Caged Sun, everyone's lands in the case of Gauntlet of Power, and they give all your creatures +1/+1.
All the creatures of that colour that you chose.
Yeah, and as your fairies are blue and black, it doesn't matter. Just pick whatever you've got the most mana of on the table. Una does not care.
While we're still on the subject of Cabal Coffers... What if you could untap one of your lands, such as your Cabal Coffers?
Hey, that would work.
Yep. Deserted Temple is a land that you pay one and tap it to untap something else, like your Cabal Coffers. Sword of Feast and Famine has been on our watch list before, and if you do combat damage to a player, then you untap all your lands.
It's a quality card in every deck.
We've talked about the blue creatures that untap lands when they enter the battlefield. There are also a few blue spells that do it. Frantic Search... Rewind, and Treachery.
Treachery is getting expensive now.
Yep.
Yeah, it's used to be a relatively cheap card, but it's gone right up.
There is an instant called Turnabout in blue, which you pick a player and you pick a type of card, and then they all untap.
Or tap. Yeah, it's good. You can get the lethal attack through, tap all their creatures. In fact, Turnabout is possibly a little-known blue staple that should be in almost every blue deck.
Yeah, it's very useful.
If you're not a deck that cares about attacking lots, it almost says take an extra turn. Almost.
And there's the zombie Fate Stitcher, a favorite of Josh Lee Quay of the Command Zone, that lets you untap a target permanent.
Although I think he owns all of them, so if you want to buy one, you have to message him.
Oh, man.
Oh, if you're doing Mana Rocks and you want to activate Una in between, because she doesn't tap for her ability, remember?
Yeah.
Unwinding Clock is an absolute must.
Yeah, if you have Mana Rocks, then you can untap all your Mana Rocks, and if you can generate one blue or black mana, you can fire Una's Deck Disintegration Laser every turn.
Illusionist Braces means you can do a Rings of Bright Hearth and double her ability, which is always good fun.
And exile twice the cards.
So you've exiled all your opponent's decks, or a load of cards out of their decks. Is there any way of abusing that, Nate?
There's the possibility. I've looked at it, but I don't really like it enough to use it. Eldrazi Processors.
Yes.
Una exiles cards, and Eldrazi Processors all give you some benefit by interring the cards that have already been exiled. For example, Blightherder, when you cast it, it makes 3 tokens if you put 2 exiled cards back into their owner's graveyards. And almost all of the Eldrazi Processors are usable in Dimir colors.
Yeah, it wasn't a particularly powerful mechanic, the processor mechanic. It didn't make a splash in that standard format. It didn't do much in limited, and I've not seen it really in any Eternal formats either. There is a good one, though, that's not really a processor, but is a processor.
It's an honorary processor.
Yeah, so this card... should be in any non-green deck, I think, because it's a powerful creature and gives you ramp. And if you've got the ability to chuck it back in your hand, which many of these decks do, you can do it. So it is Oblivion Sower.
Yes.
Yeah, 6 mana for a massive Eldrazi. But the important bit, I think he's a 5/7. I haven't got him in front of me, but I play him so much, I know his ability. When you cast him, exile the top 4 cards of target opponent's library. And then any lands they have in exile, not just from those 4, but any they have in exile, come into play under your control.
Yes, they do. And if you've been firing Una's laser at some deck and then their exile is full of lands, then Oblivion Sower gets you all those lands. And they're not tapped when they come in.
I think I Oblivion Sowered friend of the show and former guest on the show, Robin Cass's Delve deck. For, I think I got maybe 12 lands off of it. with an oblivion. So he said, I forgot you have that. I can't do a Swedish accent. I'm sorry, Robin. He said, I forgot you've got that. And I was like, won't forget next time, will you? He's like, no. No, I won't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a 6 mana to put like 12 lands into play. It was pretty good.
And if you want to see another example of what Oblivion Sower can do, watch the Star City Games Commander Versus Season 5, Episode 8, where a certain Damia deck casts Oblivion Sower after milling someone for a quarter of their deck, and Obnixilus the Fallen is already on the board.
We should really promote that. We'll put the link to it in the show notes. I know we might have said it before, but Nate submitted a deck for the Star City Games Commander Versus series, which is a long-running series where they get 4 guys to play a game of Commander, record it, and sort of commentate over their own game as they play. It's good fun. I won't give you a spoiler who wins, but it's Nate's deck versus the professor from Tolarian Community College. What was the professor's deck?
He had Sapling of Kalfenor.
Sapling of Kalfenor. Josh Lee Kwai's Riku of the Two Reflections deck. And Blake Rasmussen of Daily MTG's, his deck was a...
I think it was Rune of the Hidden Realm.
It was a Rune Flicker deck. Won't spoil who won, but it's definitely worth a good watch. And Nate shows his prowess as a deck builder in it. Nate, what was your deck again, sir? It was Damia, Sage of Stone, yes?
Damia, Sage of Stone.
Sultai. Sultai is really good. First time in my life I played with Sultai recently. It's fantastic. Just so slick. So, yeah, sorry. Promoting stuff there. Nate, you'll put that in there. So Una has a load of cards which really work well with her, doesn't she?
Yes. I listed a couple of them here. Scion of Una for 2 and a blue. It's a creature fairy soldier, 1/1. It's got flash, so you can... Surprise! It flies. Other fairy creatures you control get +1/+1. Hopefully you have a bunch of other fairy creatures. Oh, and other fairy creatures you control have Shroud.
That's very important.
So if someone targets Una with something horrible, and you have a Scion of Una in your hand, well, they can't target Una anymore.
Nope, their spell fizzles. Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, and since it has an anthem effect, it's not a bad target for a kicked Rite of Replication, or maybe even a single shot clone.
Yes, and you can do it because it's other fairies you control have Shroud for the right. I know normal clones don't target, but Rite of Replication does. But Scion does not give itself Shroud.
Unless you have 2 of them, then they give each other Shroud.
Yay! A card that everyone loves is Edric, Spymaster of Trest, which allows you to, you know, deal damage to people and draw cards. But you can't do that because it's Simic. But a similar card, which is very Dimiri, Dire Undercurrents. 3/2 hybrid blue-black. For whenever a blue creature comes into play under your control, you may have target player draw a card.
Hey, I think I'll target me.
But it is political. You can target someone else if you're trying to make allies. Whenever, or if they've only got a couple of cards left in their deck because you've been Unaring the hell out of them. And whenever a black creature comes into play under your control, guess what you get to do, Nate?
Target player discards a card.
Correct! Yes. Which means your Una becomes, every time one of those blue-black fairies comes in, someone discards a card and you draw a card.
Yeah.
Win-win-win.
So it's kind of like a Lay of Old deck in that sense.
Yes.
You have a handful of cards and all of your opponents have no cards.
I mean, I guess you could be nice and stack the triggers. If you're playing the blue-black fairies specifically, stack the triggers so they draw their cards first and then discard their hand. If you want to just get their deck into their yard.
Eh? Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there are situations where when you're playing Dimir, and I've been in this situation before where, you know, 40 cards in my hand is enough, Nate. I don't need more than that. We're doing just fine with this many. Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. So it turns Una's laser into a draw effect as well.
Awesome.
So that's our Dimir commander for this topic.
Speaking of decks that don't let your opponents have any cards, Nath of the Guilt Leaf. 3 black and green, legendary creature elf warrior, 4/4. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may have target opponent discard a card at random.
Ooh.
And whenever an opponent discards a card for any reason, you may create a 1/1 green elf warrior creature token.
Nice.
Now, this card does show up in your Yggdrasil C16 decks because it has a lot of wheels in that deck. A lot of wheeling and windfalling effects. Reforging the soul. So you cast one of those like Leovold does, then everybody's discarding
maybe
21 cards total. So you get 21 elves.
Yep. It's powerful. Just a quick thing. What is that that Nath of the Guiltleaf is riding?
I've wondered that myself. I think it's a Tauntaun.
It looks like a bear and a llama had a child.
Yeah, it's a Tauntaun.
It's a Blama. And I misread his flavor text at first. I misread it as a savage hunter with a prince's bearding. And then realized it actually said prince's bearing. I was like, that describes Phil, a savage hunter with a prince's bearding.
Why, thanks, Sean.
That's all right, little Phil. I know you haven't got your beard yet because you're only a child. But when you're older, it will be so spectacular. And I'm reliably told, as soft as a pony's nose.
Wow.
So if you see Phil at a convention or a GT or a GP, sorry, not GT, or a PPTQ or even at your LGS or even while he's shopping in Walmart, I want you to go stroke his beard and say, it is as soft as a pony's nose, and then just walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
So, Nath of the Guiltleaf, you're going to make your opponents discard their cards, and while it's not the same as milling from their libraries, they are putting their cards into the graveyard, so either the Copanian or the Plorgian philosophies will work with Nath of the Guiltleaf.
And because you're in green instead of blue, you can actually exploit the fact that you've got a ton of tokens, whereas the Dimir really can't very well.
Yeah, and if you get a mess of elf tokens, well, green has a lot of ways of getting more tokens, and it does have a bunch of elves that make your elves bigger.
Yeah, coat of arms is a win condition in this deck, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it is.
Oh, that's a card. That's a really good card. But the other way to win is make the discard hurt. So the best ways of doing that, the easiest ways of doing that, is Megrim and Liliana's Caress. Enchantments, both of them, for 2 and a black. Whenever an opponent discards a card, they lose 2 life.
I think Liliana's Caress is 1 and a black.
Oh, is it? Is it even better?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay, right. Well, I stand corrected. But these are super efficient, powerful, powerful effects that, with the right wheel, will just win you the game. Bloodchief Ascension. It's a little harder to get going because you have to get 3 quest counters on it by dealing damage to people. But once it's got 3 quest counters on it, it's whenever a card goes into opponent's graveyard from anywhere, they lose 2 life and you gain 2 life. Oh, sorry, you may gain 2 life.
I think I will.
Yeah, the only time I've not gained the life was because we were playing a no infinite combos rule, and if you went infinite, you could only do it 5 times. So I was like, well, do you know what? 10 life and you losing 10 is pretty good. Yeah, quest for the Nihil Stone. I don't know this one, Nate. Not one I've played with. Perhaps I should. Let's have a look.
Yes, it works well in Leovold or Nath decks. It's an enchantment for a single black. Whenever an opponent discards a card, you may put a quest counter on quest for the Nihil Stone. At the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, if that player has no cards in hand and Quest for the Nihil Stone has 2 or more quest counters on it, you may have that player lose 5 life.
You may. Do you think you will?
I think I will.
You sure?
Yep.
One last try. You sure?
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. I tried to persuade him. Other ways to exploit discard triggers. One of my favorites, and I saw listener Pete and my paper meta go nuts with this recently, and it's just been reprinted in Commander 2016, in the Yggdrasil deck, in fact. Waste Not. 1 and a black for an enchantment. Whenever an opponent discards a creature card, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token. And whenever an opponent discards a land card, add 2 black to your mana pool. And whenever an opponent discards a non-creature, non-land card, you draw a card. So I saw someone not go infinite in the traditional sense, but essentially get everyone to discard their hand with a Windfall. When I had 12 cards in my hand, which meant everyone drew 12, including him, gave him a million mana, cards, and zombies, hit his next wheel, cast the wheel, did it again, did it again, did it again. hey, look what happened. I've got 700 zombies. I'm in, because he's playing Yidris, he had it in red as well. Here's my hammer of perforos slash fervor slash whatever, I win. You're like, well, bravo. It's one of those where you had to stand back and clap and just say, yep, I approve. I approve wholeheartedly. So waste not, crazy card, especially in any discard-focused deck.
Yeah, and moving on to artifacts, there's Geth's Grimoire. For 4. Whenever an opponent discards a card from his or her hand, you may draw a card, and I think I will.
Yep, it's a good one. A very good one.
And it goes well with the next card, Words of Waste. And it's an enchantment for 2 and a black. Pay 1. The next time you would draw a card this turn, each opponent discards a card instead. So if you have both Geth's Grimoire and Words of Waste, then spend your mana and you get a bunch of draw triggers. And yeah, nobody has cards and you have a bunch of cards. And maybe you also have a bunch of elf tokens.
Yeah, the next artifact's a classic, Memory Jar. Tap it and sacrifice it. Each player sets their hand to one side, draws 7 new cards, and then at the end of the turn, everyone discards that hand and picks up the hand they just had. Which obviously, you do it in your own turn, your opponents are going to have to discard a lot other than their instance, and that's if they have the mana to play their instance.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very effective. There's also Magus of the Jar, which is the same thing on a creature.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, some ways to make your opponents discard. Cunning Lethomancer. I'm not going to read the whole cards for these.
Yep.
Cunning Lethomancer. Scythe Spectre. Stronghold Rats. Sadistic Hypnotist.
I hate that one.
That's a good one in Nath.
I really hate that one.
That turns Sadistic Hypnotist and Nath on the field at the same time. Turns all your opponent's cards into elves.
Yep.
Mind Slash.
Hmm?
Larceny. Creeping Dread. Necrogen Mists. And maybe Painful Quandary.
Yeah. It's got a got an edge to it, Painful Quandary, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
No one likes having that done to them.
Now, if your Nath deck works too well, then your opponents never have any cards, and you stop getting elf tokens. So sometimes you have to include ways to get your opponents to draw cards. Like, Temple Bell is one that I like because you can control when they draw the card, and I'm going to do it on the end step right before my turn. Same for Mikokoro, Center of the Sea. There is an artifact called Anvil of Bogarden, which means everybody discards on their draw step.
Which is now getting expensive, I noticed the other day.
Yep, I think Leovold did it.
Yeah, probably.
And there's a land, Gyarete Sanitarium, where everyone draws and discards.
Excellent.
Do you have anything before we go to specific cards?
No, it's a kind of deck where I think you need to play with it responsibly. If you're only ever going to build one commander deck, because you play other formats mostly, but your guys occasionally play commander, I wouldn't build a hand destruction deck generally as a rule of thumb, because
it's mean.
It's mean, and I think you'll get kicked out, not kicked out in the sort of you can't play with us, but killed in games fast. Yeah. I don't enjoy playing against it. I consider it fairly close to stacks. Like, top deck Magic is almost as bad as I can't play anything Magic. At least it's not in blue, so it's got Counterspell as well. You know what I mean? That's the only thing it's got going for it. But it is a very solid deck.
Yeah, well, I think mono red players aren't going to mind it so much, since they're used to top decking all the time.
I think, what's it called? Nephalia Academy will upset this deck a lot.
Aww.
So if it's a land that whenever an opponent forces you to discard a card, instead you can put any of those cards on top of your library in any order.
Yes. Like Library of Leng.
Yeah, you'll still get your discard triggers though, whereas with Library of Leng you won't. But I would suggest if Nath turns up in your playgroup, in fact I put it in every deck anyway, but I would suggest if Nath turns up in your playgroup, just slipping one of your basic lands out for a Nephalia Academy. And they're like 10 cents, so you know. Yeah.
So, closing out with some Nath-specific cards. If you want to spend $12.50 for some reason on a flavor card, Giltleaf Palace is a land that when it comes into play, you may reveal an elf card from your hand. If you don't, it comes into play tapped, and it can tap for black or green.
Nice.
So it's a flavor win, and it's a Golgari dual land that has a good chance of coming in untapped if you're using elf tribal. But I don't know if I want to spend more than $10 on it.
Una has a Secluded Glen that does exactly the same thing, but for fairies, but that tends to not be a fairy tribal deck. So you might want to put it in for flavor, and occasionally you'll luck out and put it in as a sort of poor man's underground sea.
Yeah. So instead of a $12 card, you can spend 20 cents for what I think is a Nath specific card, Shaman of the Pack. One black and green creature elf shaman for 3/2. When Shaman of the Pack enters the battlefield, target opponent loses life equal to the number of elves you control. And if you cast a wheel with Nath out, then they're going to lose 20 life when you cast your Shaman of the Pack.
So, in the... Yeah, that's good. In the Vorthos, the story, the Giltleaf Elves of Lorwyn are basically elf Nazis, is that right? So they are obsessed with eugenics and beauty and making everything perfect. And because of that, they go and create genocide and anything they consider ugly, which is the Iblights.
Which is another elf tribe.
Also, anything that they consider ugly that lives in their forest. So the Boggarts and the Redcaps and basically, you know, ugly things because they are perfect, the Giltleaf. Yeah. They're not very nice. I guess that's why they got the black in their green. If any of you are wondering why elves have black in their casting cost, thought that's a bit un-Vorthos-y. That's any black-green elves, nearly all the black-green elves that have ever been printed have been from the Plain of Lorwyn.
And they're evil there.
Yep. Yep. So, we did mention one other token commander, didn't we, Nate?
Yes. Kalitas, Traitor of Get.
Kalitas.
It's about a $20 card. The prices have been spiking like crazy lately, so I'm not sure what's still accurate and what's not. But Kalitas is 2BB for a legendary creature, vampire warrior, 3/4 with lifelink. If a non-token creature an opponent controls would die, then there's a replacement effect. It doesn't die. Instead, it gets exiled. Ha ha ha. And you get a free zombie.
Yeah, so according to TCG Player Mid, it is $21.95.
Wow.
Yeah, and that has cycled out of standard.
So he's got another ability that I don't use very often. For 2BB, you can sacrifice another vampire or zombie, and then you put 2+1/+1 counters on Kalitas, Traitor of Get.
So if you're desperate, you can Vorthos him, essentially.
He can eat all the zombies and vampires. So you could maybe save him from a toxic deluge if you have a bunch of mana by eating all the rest of your zombies.
Yeah, or if you... there are ways of exploiting creatures with high power and toughness in black, like Disciple of Bolas and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know it creates tokens, but is this not essentially a zombie tribal commander?
I do play it as a zombie tribal commander. And it has built-in Plurigian Exile in the style of Anafenza the Foremost, but you get free zombies.
Yeah.
So I play it as a mono-black zombie tribal plus board wipes, board wipes, board wipes. A lot of board wipes in my Kalitas deck. And he only affects your opponent's creature to graveyard transition, so your creatures still go to your graveyard, which could be handy if you're playing a zombie tribal.
Yeah, it's very good. And then it's the usual token/tribal win cons that don't use green. So, as well, we've already mentioned it once, but Coat of Arms or Eldrazi Monument. What's the really cool one? Acroba's Memorial. That's a badass spell. That sort of thing to get your win. You probably don't want to use Leyline of the Void because that will switch off. You'll get no zombies from that. Is that correct?
Yeah, Leyline of the Void is a replacement effect. The Leyline of the Void replacement effect will not have any of your opponent's creatures die.
No, as Plane of Void is you get exiled when you get to the graveyard. Leyline of the Void is you get exiled instead of going to the graveyard.
Yes.
So, well, yeah, with Plane of Void, you would still get it because it says instead Sorry, it doesn't say instead, it says then. So you go to the graveyard, then go. When? When is the key word, not then. When you get to hit the graveyard, you then get exiled. So you still have hit the graveyard. Whereas Leyline says, you go to exile instead, baby. You never see the yard.
So don't run Leyline of the Void in your Kalidus deck. But do run Planar Void.
It's an important distinction, actually. That is a good highlight, that, of something that all Commander players, particularly if it's not your normal format, that you should learn, which is replacement effects and triggered ability. So replacement, particularly with Commanders going to the command zone. So if I have a Commander who only has one toughness, and I strap a skull clamp on him, unless I put him in my, or put it in my graveyard, it doesn't go, it doesn't die, so I don't get to draw the cards. It gets goes somewhere else. And die or destroy means specifically to go to the graveyard from the battlefield. There are lots of things that don't trigger when a commander goes to the command zone that if you don't know the rule, you'll probably do in error.
So putting to the command zone instead of the graveyard is a replacement effect.
It is.
That you can use on your commander.
Correct. He does not ever see the graveyard, so therefore he doesn't die and he is not, doesn't trigger any dies or destroys triggers.
Okie doke.
Okay. You probably want to keep Kalidus alive, don't you?
Yeah, Dark Steel Plate or some other artifact-based indestructibility like Shield of Caldera, maybe?
Yeah.
Those are helpful if you're going to be board wiping all over the place, because, yeah, it's nice to have Kalidus still there.
If you put in Shield of Caldera, do you drop the other two in just for fun?
No, I don't, actually. Actually, I don't really play with Shield of Caldera. I just have room for a Dark Steel Plate.
Okay. You probably want to run Edict effects, which is a reference to Diabolic Edict, which are cards which force your opponents to sacrifice their creatures.
Oh, yeah.
So Fleshbag Marauder, Slum Reaper, Merciless Executioner, Grave Pact, Dictate of Erebos, and Butcher of Malakir are the six that you will see all the time in Commander.
Yeah, and we often see Shaeldred if we're playing against you.
Yeah. I do own multiple copies of that card and put it in a lot of decks because it's awesome. Hey, Lil Phil, what do you think about Shaeldred Whispering One?
Bad bug lady hurt me.
I suppose now, Lil Phil, you'll have to start using her to teach the people that used her against you a lesson.
Okay, hey, that's a good idea. I think I'll do that.
Cheers, Lil Phil. I'll send you one in the post. classic black cards like Rise of the Dark Realms you probably don't want in this deck, but Living Death...
Or Living End.
You absolutely do want. Or Living End, yeah, they both do it. So they're the cards that put all the creature cards from everybody's graveyards back into play under their owner's control. Well, your opponents don't have creature cards in their graveyards, but you do.
Mm-mm.
You certainly do. So, yeah, that's a good one. Nate, you've left a card at the bottom of this show plan here that I've never seen before.
This is one of my favorite board wipes in Kalidus, or even in King Makar, if going back to last episode. Hellfire for 2BBB. It's a sorcery. All non-black creatures are destroyed, which means my creatures don't get destroyed.
Yep.
Hellfire also does X plus 3 damage to you. X is the number of creatures placed in the graveyard. Hey, how many creatures get placed in the graveyard if Kalidus is out?
Zero. Zero creatures.
Yeah. Zero.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Zero, yep. Now, this is a card that I bet you like because it's one of those cards which is normally awful, but in this deck it's usable, so everyone goes, what the hell is that? And especially anyone under the age of about 25 will have no idea what this card does.
Yeah, and I'm not too worried about the life loss, even in non-Kalidus decks, because it's comparable to maybe a Toxic Deluge.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
And you get to keep your stuff.
Yeah, you do. And it's one of those magic cards that they used to do way back in the day, because this is from Legends, kids. Ask your grandparents. It has a quote from a real-world literary source on it.
Oh, my goodness.
In this case, it says, high on a throne of royal state. I can't read it.
Insatiate
to pursue vain war with heathen. Basically, sitting on a big throne, going to have a fight with heaven. And that's from John Milton's Paradise Lost.
Wow. That's a real dude.
Yeah, you're learning stuff while you play. That's edutainment, kids.
I learned a line from Paradise Lost.
You did. Not the popular rock goth band Paradise Lost, who had an excellent album called Draconian Times. Nate, anything else to say about Galitas?
No, I think we're good.
Is this the second most Mexican-sounding commander after Ramses de Piedro?
I don't know. Play your zombie anthems and get your zombie tokens and then swarm.
Everyone likes a death baron.
Yep. We did an episode on zombie tribal. We
certainly did.
Number 21 on zombie tribal, and you can learn some more cards in that one.
So, any special card you'd like to give us this week, Nate, as a gentle nod?
I will. So, I have a message of the week.
Mm.
This is a card called Rift Sweeper for one in a green. It's a creature elf shaman for 2/2. When Rift Sweeper enters the battlefield, choose target face-up exiled card. Its owner shuffles it into his or her library. So if you're playing against a Plorgian philosophy and you're crucial, oh, I need that card. It was my combo deck and it's focused all around that card and you exiled it, Nate. I hate that. Well, Rift Sweeper can bring it back into your library.
Can I name an anti-Plorgian Dimir card?
Sure.
As a special show note of the week from me. Torrent Elemental. 4 and a blue for a creature elemental. 3/5 with flying. Whenever Torrent Elemental attacks, tap all creatures defending player controls. Now that's a good ability, I hear you say. That's not the anti-Plorgian, I hear you say. Well, let me tell you its second ability. 3 and 2 hybrid Golgari. That's black-green kids making this a Sultai card. Put Torrent Elemental from exile onto the battlefield tapped. Activate this ability only any time you could cast a sorcery.
I'm back.
Back again. Making all my creatures effectively unblockable to one opponent.
Man.
Yeah, I love Torrent Elemental. I think it's one of them cards that I would stick in every Sultai deck just for the sake of having it, like Villainous Wealth. I'm playing Sultai. Why wouldn't I have it? So, listeners, for a future episode where we are going to discuss things that would have been helpful for you to know when you started playing EDH, whether EDH was your first Magic experience or whether you came to the format fresh from already being a seasoned veteran on the Pro Tour scene, what questions and what information would have been good for you to know? If you can email it over to cast@commanderandmtg.com, or you can tweet it at our Twitter, which is @CommanderAndMTG. It will help me greatly for a future episode.
All right.
Thanks very much. Yeah. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. If you would like to support the podcast and all the good things that we put in your ears, head over to Patreon. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes.
You can also subscribe to our YouTube and like our videos.
We love our listeners, and we are incredibly grateful to all the patrons like Andy Bentley, Jason Hill, and of course, the aforementioned Robin Cass, who I know we've spoken about before, but he recently had a child and we didn't thank him, so we're looking forward to seeing him raise the next generation of Dimir Generals. Thanks, Robin. You're doing great work. Come and playtest with us, and if you donate $10 or more per episode, you can come join the Patreon chat we hold over on Facebook. Our theme song was allegedly created by...
I did that.
Yeah, Nate Burgess. Our logo was created for the podcast by MrPicto.co.uk, with assistance from Lil Phil's wife, Kelly DeLuca. Cheers, Lil Phil. Special thanks to our tech whizzes, Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and to Justin for his server space. You can reach us by going to our website, which is commanderandmtg.com. Our email is cast@commanderandmtg.com. And you can find us on all the social media by searching for Commander and MTG Podcast. Individually, on Twitter, I am at Copain26.
I'm at Mr. Plorg.
And Lil Phil?
I'm at Ketjack.
And Lil Phil, could you take us out, please?
And that's our show.
Go on, you go get some candy now. Go on.
Yay, candy.
Mandarin.
I'm reading this conversation you've got here about philosophies. I think we should talk about that now, Nate.
Should we save that to the end, though?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, all that's right. A good point. So, we play Dimir slightly differently normally, don't we, Nate?
Yes, there's a schism. Ooh. After listening to our own Dimir-focused episode 57 with Patron Robin Koss, I have found that there are divergent philosophies within Dimir among our hosts.
Hmm.
Now, while we both work to refute the claim that Mill doesn't work in Commander, it certainly does.
Oh, it really does, yeah.
Sean and myself use different approaches within Dimir to achieve that goal of making Mill work in Commander, while we use many of the same Dimir cards.
Mm.
Now, Una is a fine indicator to gauge where one's Dimir philosophy lies, because the reason that I like Una is precisely the same reason Sean does not like Una.
Yes, absolutely.
Since Una exiles your opponent's cards, Sean can't reuse them with his usual tricks.
Hey, they're good tricks, though.
Yeah, you use those tricks.
I'm going to define what Nate has christened the Copainian philosophy of Dimir. The Copainian Dimir philosophy emphasizes graveyard exploitation. Or, as I'm going to start recalling it, Graveyard Expropriation, because that's a spell that should be in all your Dimir decks. It is acceptable, always acceptable, to mill your opponent's cards, because your deck is designed to use the cards in your opponent's graveyards. And it's incredibly crucial that your deck, if you're using my philosophy, is going to use your opponent's cards better than they can. And it's a safe assumption when playing with Dimir, some commanders will thank you for milling them. So a very good example of that is my favorite Dimir commander, Lazav, Dimir Mastermind, because if you're just exiling cards, you ain't getting any triggers on him.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So what I'm calling the Plorgian Dimir, championed by myself, emphasizes graveyard exile. It is acceptable to mill your opponent's cards because your deck is designed to exile the graveyards at the same time, so that your opponents are throwing fistfuls of cards directly into the void.
Yeah, so Esper, blue, black, and white, or even just Orzhov, black and white, do offer a lot more ways of making your opponent's graveyard irrelevant than just a blue, black Dimir. And some of the key hate cards are in white and in white-black. The first one that springs to mind is Rest in Peace.
Yes.
Just boom. And then a particularly good Orzhov example is one of the best wipe cards in the game, Merciless Eviction.
Oh, yes.
Which exiles all of a type of permanent that you choose.
And there's also Identity Crisis.
Oh, I forgot Identity Crisis.
Which gets rid of all graveyards and all hands of target opponent.
Yeah, one opponent. You basically give the middle finger, or as what I now call it, give the Saskia to one opponent and say, come get me, brah.
Yeah, instead of calling it Plorgian Dimir, we might call it Plorgian Black with variant guilds and shards. White Black Orzhov is better at exiling graveyards and exiling permanents on the field, and Blue Black Dimir is better at putting libraries into graveyards. However, Black by itself has enough graveyard exile to be sufficient, in my opinion. Now, the same Plorgian Dimir core lies within my Una deck, my Phoenix deck, Merebear, Damia, and Krosis, as well as the theoretical Leovold deck that I stopped playing.
Yeah, because you enjoy having friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
Good, 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 good.
Now, as a high-level strategy, The Plorgian Dimir is very effective against Copanian Dimir, which is why Sean generally tries to kill Nate first.
Yep, that's the reason. Nate's definitely the reason.
Mm-hmm. Plorgian Dimir is also very effective against any combo deck, since exiling a key combo piece can cripple decks that might be more fragile if they don't have access to a very few specific cards. Now, robust combo decks will have ways of returning pieces from the graveyard, but only the really robust can get them back from exile. Also, if your opponent builds their deck to have a high number of tutors to access a toolbox of a low number of solutions, then randomly eliminating cards has a greater impact if it hits one of those few solutions. Plorgian Dimir's win condition is to actually mill out your opponents, but you mill their cards into the void.
Yeah, so the Copanian Dimir win condition is to access somebody else's win condition in their own yard. So a very good example is Havengull Lich. So their creature goes in, you get their best creature, cast it, hit them with it. Consuming Aberration is another way of exploiting their graveyard because it's got a massive power and toughness. You drop something like Altar of Dementia, which is sack it, and mill someone for its creature's power. Or Phoenix. If Phoenix is on the table, you tap it and then double mill out their graveyard. And therefore, you're getting access to all their juiciest spells. There's a whole bunch of Dimir, specifically Dimir-coloured spells, which are going to get you access to that yard fast that Nate probably doesn't play. Also some mono-black ones as well, like Beacon of Unrest is one that springs to mind.
Yes. Now, some Plorgian examples are Fathom Feeder, since it has Ingest.
Mm.
Sire of Stagnation, which discourages people from playing lands. And Ashiok Nightmare Weaver can just exile cards off of someone's deck. Thada Adel Acquisitor is a Plorgian ramp card for opponent mana rocks.
Yes, I bet Gonti is going to be in the Plorgian Dimir mill as well, because it exiles the best card off their top four.
Yes.
So you're looking more at effects that are going to exploit your opponent's graveyard. So if you want to ramp, a very good card in the Copanian philosophy would be Geth, Lord of the Vault. Now, he allows you to cast artifacts from opponent's yards, so you get the best mana rocks that you've milled into their yard, or a Wormcoil Engine, or something obscene like that. My two favourite mill cards, by a long way, and these are staples of my Lazav deck, are Mindgrind, which is a Dimir, so one blue, one black, and X, and grind people for that many land, which is a win condition its own if you get it late game.
Oh, yes.
And it'll kill those green players that have Boundless Realms. So, you know, if they've got 20 of their lands out, you probably only need to Mindgrind for 10 to get a majority of their deck. This won't kill them, but it'll get most of their deck gone. But my favourite is Traumatize, which is 3 and 2 blue. Target player puts the top half of their deck rounded down into their graveyard. So you play Lazav, you know that guy that's always playing with Avacyn, something like that. There's always a Kalia player, isn't there? Or someone. If there's a white deck, it's normally got Avacyn in it. You got a 50-50 chance of whacking it. You know, if the worst card you're going to get is an Iona as your commander. Fun times.
Yes. And while Sean would play Lazav and then Traumatize, I would play Planar Void and then Traumatize. And then the opponent's combo deck loses access to half their cards, and then I play Oblivion Sower and control half their deck's lands.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, my backup, the reason I prefer mine is I tend to find straight mill, people go for your kill, but so with the Lazav deck, you try and mill out one, possibly two, but normally one opponent, and then you use Lazav as a sort of pseudo Voltron kill condition. When someone hits a Eldrazi Titan into their yard, that's how you kill that person with my mill, because they'll go, you're never going to mill me out, I've got an Eldrazi Titan. It's like, okay, the Eldrazi Titan still hits the yard before shuffling the deck in, so suddenly you've got a hexproof Ulamog as your commander.
Man.
See how well they deal with that.
Not too well.
Yes. So yeah, most of the creatures can work in both Copanian and Plorgian decks. So Nemesis of Reason, Mirko Vosk, the Mind Drinker, Phoenix God of Deception will win you games often. Sazdek, Lord of Secrets, if you feeling like you want to do it for flavor reasons. He's not that good.
He takes a while to get good.
Yeah, Swiftfoot Boots on him makes him pretty decent, but he's got to do a couple of attacks before he gets going. Staples in my deck, Rise of the Dark Realms is the best wing con. Rise of the Dark Realms is put all creatures and all graveyards into play under your control. And then if you've got your Altar of Dementia, you just sack the whole table to mill everyone's entire yards out often. Yeah, it's a good one. Living Death's a good one, especially if you can find a way of exploiting your own coming in triggers. Other ones I really like, Beacon of Unrest, which I've already mentioned, which is get a card out of someone else's graveyard and cast it. I particularly like Memory Plunder, which is possibly my favourite Dimir spell, so it might be my favourite spell full stop, which is effectively a instant speed board wipe for 4 mana. Because normally someone's done a board wipe of some description and you've got 4 mana cast a spell, an instant or sorcery out of someone's graveyard, and that breaks the timing restriction, so you can cast the sorcery for free at instant speed, because Memory Plunder is a speed instant card itself.
Wow.
Yep, and you you can't do that if there are graveyards in exile, can you, Nate?
Mm-mm. And how do we get them into exile? Well, some Plorgian staples include Planar Void and Leyline of the Void, which are both enchantments that you could have out on turn one. Relic of Progenitus is a very cheap artifact that exiles all graveyards and draws you a card. And Bajuka Bog goes into all of my black decks.
Oh, yeah, you've... Sorry, I'm just looking ahead. I forgot one of my favorite ever spells, Spelltwine, and the two primordials, Diluvian Primordial and Sepulchral Primordial, which are just crazy in a large multiplayer game. So Spelltwine's cast an instant or sorcery out of your graveyard and do the same to one of your opponent's graveyards for free, then exile those spells. Diluvian Primordial's cast an instant or sorcery out of each of your opponent's graveyards. And Sepulchral Primordial, cast a creature card out of each of your opponent's graveyards. These will often just win you the game, especially if you drop either of the Primordials, then clone. Yeah, this will win you a game fast.
Yes. As an aside, my Yuleva deck is actually following the Copanian philosophy within Grixis.
Excellent.
Since it uses several cards to recur things from everyone's graveyards. We mentioned Rise of the Dark Realms, Memory Plunder, Spelltwine, and I've also got Mizzix's Mastery, so I can do all those again. Well, not Spelltwine, since it exiles itself, but yeah.
Now, a lot of the cards that I run mill me as well. So, a very good card you probably want to consider is Psychic Spiral, which is an instant for 5 mana, blue and 4, which is shuffle all the cards from your own graveyard back into your deck, and then target opponent puts that many cards from the top of their deck into their graveyard. And that will cost you a gumball at most.
Wow.
Wah-ha. And because it's an instant, they often don't see it coming. If you're running Hinder or Spell Crumple or any effect that puts a card onto the bottom of an opponent's library, or even if you're just mean and want to hang around and see if someone else does it to themselves, Tunnel Vision will effectively kill someone almost if they put any card onto the bottom of their library. So you name a card, they mill until they reveal the named card, and that's that. So if they put something at the bottom of their library, just name what they've put on the bottom and say put all but one card of your deck into your graveyard.
Yikes.
Yeah, it's a good one. Doing it with a Hinder and a Spell Crumple's a touch mean, but, you know, worst things have happened at sea. Or you can do it to yourself. You can Tunnel Vision yourself and name Rise of the Dark Realms. So you put a bunch of your deck into the graveyard and then put it all back into play. Fun tricks.
I don't like that.
Yeah. But that kind of separates our philosophies, so it's all shenanigans. I think yours is probably more effective at getting the kill, but draws way more hate.
Yeah, probably.
And I think, and this isn't a criticism of you in any way, I think one of the great untalked about skills in EDH, particularly at the deck building level, not the politics level, is hate management. It comes into the same realm as the 75% philosophy, isn't it?
If you're brewing Lay of Old or Narset, then you're not avoiding the hate.
No, you might as well build them as cutting edge, bleeding edge, powerful as you can, because people are going to treat you like that anyway. Whereas I think Saskia, I don't think she's as good as those other commanders, before you think that. I think Saskia, I've heard people referring to her as being a political commander. I think she's the opposite. So imagine, if you will, you've gone to the UN Security Council because you don't want heavy trade sanctions put on your country because you happen to be building nuclear weapons or furnaces of wrath or dictates of the twin gods, as we call them in this instance. And you come to that negotiation, to politics, but you slam your loaded Colt 45 on the table and say, someone's going to get shot. Is anyone going to make a deal with you, Nate?
If you say who's going to get shot and they have lots of enemies.
Yeah, but then to make it work. So I think the temptation is going to be there. Like, if I wasn't the person who's being told I'm going to get shot, I'm also not the Saskia player. So if someone said, oh, I'm going to kill Nate, he's got a really good board state. Well, how are they going to kill you if you've got a really good board state and are a problem? They're going to kill you by hitting me.
Well, I encourage people to hit you.
Yeah, you do, but you're getting named as the extra player. You're getting named as the player who's going to take double damage, or at least,
man.
You know. Do you see what I mean? It doesn't work as a political commander because it's too much threat right out there in your face.
So you're comparing it to, like, Hydra Omnivore.
Yeah, you drop a Hydra Omnivore, what does everyone... Do you say, don't worry, I'm only going to attack this person with a Hydra Omnivore? Everyone says, I don't care. It's going to hit everybody, isn't it? You're actually only going to hit the weakest player at the table to guarantee it gets more combat damage through to distribute it around.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah, and bringing that back to our conversation about the Dimir philosophy, I think the threat of exile over the threat of, well, it's in my graveyard, I think will draw you more hate. But your decks are probably more efficient at winning.
Cool.
Maybe I think like that because I tend to play a lot of graveyard recursion strategies, so I don't mind stuff going into my yard. But I do mind stuff going into exile, Nate.
Yeah, you do.
Anyway, speaking of annoying things called Nate, what's this next commander called?
I think I might move all that to the end, to the outro.
Oh, yeah, please do. Go for it.